Senator Kevin Cramer is going to join us coming up on the program this hour, the Talk Radio Town Hall. And he is, you know, a member of the President's Circle and part of the campaign effort. And we're going to talk a little bit about the importance of Minnesota and also just how the campaign's going. Any campaign questions that you have. But I wanted him to begin by meeting a couple of folks from Bemidji to get a little flavor of how things are happening here today. So, Senator Cramer, welcome to What's on Your Mind. Glad to have you back for the Talk Radio Town Hall today. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm in Bismarck, and I want to just start out by telling you what the highlight of my day is going to be. It has nothing to do with the campaign, but there's a wonderful World War II war hero from Mandan. Dennis Renner is the nephew of a guy named Albert Renner, and Albert Renner was a World War II veteran, as I said, was killed in the attack on Pearl Harbor, and his remains were not identified until recently, and they're coming. They came home this last week, and we're having a funeral and a burial out at the Veteran Cemetery today for Albert Renner, who died in 1941, has been in Hawaii ever since, and is home now in western North Dakota, and we're going to celebrate his life. He is one of 15 children, and four of his siblings are still living. He's got a sister who's 100, a 96-year-old brother, and a 96-year-old sister, and then brothers who are 99 and 93. So we're going to have a big Renner family reunion today in Mandan.
That's awesome. That's really neat to hear, and bless you for doing that. I know you could be here hanging out with the president, and you're back there honoring a hero, and it's Bill, you told me it's POW MIA Remembrance Day today, right?
Right.
That's true.
Senator Cramer, thank you for being an American patriot. And that's what we do. We don't need the glitter. We don't need the bright lights. But you touch the heart of a family from North Dakota, and that's what makes North Dakota a phenomenal state, and that's what makes you an amazing individual. And so proud of your leadership in North Dakota. Thank you.
Well, boy, that was very kind. Really, Scotty, it's, you know, as I think about these things and you know, there are a lot of events, although this is a very unique one for me. But it's, I think he touched on it. It's really not that I'm any different than any other North Dakotan. I'm just blessed to be able to represent North Dakota and have been raised here and live in a place where we still honor, first of all, we honor freedom. That's, you know, there are places in this country that no longer honor freedom. They prefer, you know, servitude, I'm afraid. But we also honor the people that stand in the gap for that freedom in a big way, including our first responders and police departments, as well as our servicemen and women and veterans. So anyway, I'm genuinely enthused about today and celebrating with the family of Albert Renner.
That's what America's all about. Would you introduce the senator to a couple of your guests here so we can get a little flavor of Bemidji and the countdown to the President of the United States visiting?
Senator Cramer, we are so honored to be joined here today with the past mayor of Bemidji, Mr. Dave Larson. Dave has stepped forward in a time of need for our city of Bemidji, and he is now running for councilor at large. Dave is an American patriot, a Christian. Back in 2012, when Senator Rick Santorum came to Bemidji, I called the then mayor, Dave Larson. He canceled his vacation in Florida, flew back, so he could escort Senator Rick Santorum around the beautiful city of Bemidji. Mm-hmm. And we're also joined with a senior American patriot, Jim Statton. Jim worked for 45 years at the Chevron Oil Refinery in El Segundo, California. He stood in line in Los Angeles for 3.5 hours when they had the vanity license plates. He stood there. He's going to tell a story about getting the first license plate in California that said Bemidji. And Jim is so well connected in this beautiful United States of America. He was contacted by Secret Service, and he said, I will only go to see President Trump if I can bring my dear friend Bill Batchelder. So I'm going to be proudly standing right beside Mr. Jim Statton from Bemidji, right behind President Trump. I'm wearing my red and black buffalo plaid lumberjack jacket, and I'm going to be wearing over the top a royal blue jersey that says Minnesotans for Line 3. We need to get that pipeline built. $4 billion of private investment, no tax dollars. Every municipality, every county, and every township that pipeline passes through will be receiving tax dollars for their bridges, for their roads, for their law enforcement, for their public safety.
Jim got a little animated when he started getting pumped up here about Line 3.
Okay.
Having been at the Chevron refinery, I imagine you, you know, people forget about the people that actually, who actually, you know, make the money.
Jim. I will correct Bill on one thing. 35 years at Chevron refinery. It's a mile south of LAX. We processed 350,000 barrels a day of crude oil. Crude oil came into our refinery from all over the world. We did a lot of North Slope refining. We had 35,000 barrels a day go under the city of El Segundo to LAX of CATF, which is civilian aviation turbine fuel. I was a shift supervisor at the refinery when I retired in 1990. Now, why would anybody move from L.A. to Bemidji? Because I had enough of L.A. I lived out there 45 years. Yeah. And there are worse things than ice and snow. I know.
Senator Kramer just said, well, you know, why wouldn't you move?
My wife was born and raised here in Bemidji, graduated from Bemidji High School in 1949. So it was, and the first time I was here was 1958. There were two traffic lights, and the population was about 6,000 or 7,000. Then when I moved here in 1993, the population had got up to somewhere around 10,000. There were seven traffic lights. Now there's around 15,000. If you go out around the city, there's somewhere around 40 to 45,000 people that are in the city limits, they're part of the city. Now, we now have about 20 traffic lights in town. But I can remember when I drove in L.A., I took my wife to a hospital. She was being treated for cancer. And we drove 9.5 miles. There were 36 traffic lights in 9.5 miles.
Now we know why you moved to Bemidji, Minnesota. I absolutely love it.
I love how he measures things, too, by the way. And by the way, if you want to see Bemidji go back to just a couple traffic lights, elect Joe Biden president, and then you'll lose 18 of those traffic lights because people have to leave Minnesota.
Or if we don't get Dave Larson on the council to kind of get things straightened out. What's going on, Dave? What's happening?
Well, we're doing it great in Bemidji, and Bill mentioned that he called me from Florida when Rick Santorum came in. I've almost forgiven him for that. I forgive, but I don't forget.
Yeah.
Things are great in Bemidji. They're going to be greater. It's incredible that our president, that's our president, whether you like it or not, he is our president.
I love it.
And we are obligated by the Word of God to pray for those in authority over us. And we pray for him daily for wisdom, safety, everything he needs to lead this nation another 4 years.
It is so darn important because America, as we know it, hangs in the balance.
It does. So, our future is in our ballot.
Good luck to you. I hope you're back on that council. Keep up the great work. If you can't get them to put Line 3 through, I don't think anybody can.
Well, here's the thing. Bill and I were on a radio show recorded, and I made the statement, there's only one thing worse than crude oil, and that's not having crude oil.
That's right.
It's a great point. There's more with Kevin Kramer coming up. Back with Senator Kevin Kramer in the Talk Radio Town Hall. I'm getting a little intimidated because we have a large, large studio audience today at Bemidji Woolen Mills in Bemidji, Senator. So there may be some questions for you from the crowd here today. In addition to on the phone, it's 701-258-0550 on What's on Your Mind, Talk Radio Town Hall, in the first hour today. And I want to talk a little bit about the Trump campaign. You're obviously in the inner circle and connected very well with the apparatus of the Trump campaign. You get a chance to talk to the president whenever you want to talk to the president. We are now, you know, coming up on 45 days till this election, and it's hard to believe, but now it just seems like it's zooming into us. Are you feeling confident about the president's reelection? Give us your sense of what you're thinking.
Yeah, great question, Scott. I actually every day feel more confident, and it's not that I've ever not been confident about it. But you know, you hear all the noise, and you watch enough media, and occasionally there, you get the sense that they might be against him, right? So, but the reality is that every day I feel more confident. And by the way, today's a good example of why. I mean, here's the president in Bemidji, Minnesota. Minnesota, that the one state Ronald Reagan didn't carry. And Donald Trump's definitely at play in Minnesota. And you see that investment of a trip to Bemidji by the campaign. You know that they know things. And you know that they have a Senate race that's at play there in Jason Lewis. And you're in the 7th District. And you know that there's a House race at play there that hasn't been for a very long time, decades. And so Minnesota, I think, is a good example of what you're seeing across the country in unlikely places as well as the likely places. I think it's really interesting always to watch Florida. Florida is a state that the winner in the White House, the race for the White House, has won Florida, I think, since like 1992 election. And most of the time that's been, a Republican lately. And I think that when you look at Florida and you look at how tight that is in the polls, I'll take a dead heat every day of the week with Donald Trump on the ballot in places like Florida. That means he's going to win. He's going to win fairly handily because the enthusiasm for Donald Trump is so much greater. Now, there's a lot of enthusiasm against Donald Trump, but there's no enthusiasm for Joe Biden. And so you've got the Democratic base, if they get fired up about anything, and you can see it in the riots and the looting and the burning of buildings and the attacks on police that their base is so famous for now. You see a great deal of enthusiasm there, but that's not the broad Democratic Party. I know way more Democrats that are voting for Donald Trump than I've ever known that were voting for a Republican president before. So I'm feeling very good.
So Joe Biden is still, I guess, using the pandemic to justify very, 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 for 45 days to a campaign, like unprecedented low activity of actual campaigning, like retail campaigning and being out there in front of the masses and detecting the energy and then when he does, he has a hard time completing a sentence. So it seems to me very bizarre. I mean, how is it that can continue? I mean, is it this going to be like that and he's going to get by with it?
So imagine this, Scott. Let's say you're the campaign manager for Joe Biden and you're confronted with these choices. Do we let him out and put him on TV? Yeah, we'll try to keep him to CNN and MSNBC and we'll present them the questions like, how's your family today? And, what do you think of wearing a mask? And hope like heck that he doesn't say something really, really stupid or start breathing down a woman's neck, your correspondent's neck. They'll keep, as you notice, they keep him far from other people. In fact, the other night when he was introduced to go on stage in Florida, it's like he wasn't in the building yet. So they keep him so far. So that's the one choice. Think, okay, maybe we could get him out there, show a little bit of life, and wherewithal, but run the risk of him really screwing up? Or do we keep him in the basement and just fight against the idea that he's not up to the task? That's their choices. And it's not a very good choice. And consequently, I think they're trying to hybrid. They still keep him hidden for the most part, but they'll let him out occasionally. And consequently, what they're doing is sending a signal that he's not up to the job. And when they do let him out, he proves he's not up to the job. And when you compare and contrast that to our president, regardless of what you might think of him, this guy has energy. He's sharp every single minute. He's 10 steps ahead of everybody else. High energy, very high energy, and I think that matters. I think it's more and more with every day it matters. So I don't know what they're going to do about Joe Biden, but I don't envy the decisions they have to make about how they can let him out and utilize him.
Texter says, ask Kevin about the 1345 Biden coup.
I don't even know what that is, the 1345 Biden coup.
I don't either. No.
I don't know.
Can't answer that one. Maybe need a little more details. Texter says, what are the odds Joe will be diagnosed with COVID-19 right before the debate? That brought a laugh out of the crowd here, I'll tell you.
Well,
I think it was a serious question, guys, but, it could happen, I guess.
It could have. Well, let's face it. I think what a lot of people are concerned about again, what's he going to be? You know, what's going to be the a party's approach to him after the election? Because remember, he's caught in that very difficult place right now where when he ran, he said no fossil fuels, no coal plants ever again. Fracking is going to be illegal. Embrace Bernie Sanders and the Green New Deal. And here's what we're going to do together. All that stuff. And now he's trying to sort of walk some of that stuff back. But his lack of ability to communicate and really the lack of a vehicle for communicating has got a lot of people concerned. So they're wondering what kind of a presidency going to be after this. How do you win a general election after having to beat back, a dozen socialists in a primary? And how do you reconcile your words, especially when you're no longer the sort of the gifted personality you once were? So who knows? Who knows what their strategy might be with him? But remember, the alternative is Kamala Harris. Now, let's go back to Mr. Staten there and talk about California politics.
And by the way, we ran into a couple earlier today, husband for Biden, wife for Trump. And I said to him, just give me a little time out, you're going to vote for somebody that drools and expect him to be the commander in chief? And he said, I'm voting for President Harris. I said, well, I don't know. That's much better. Hater attorney general from California. So even some of them are calculating, sort of Biden's deficiencies into the vote here. Amazing. More coming up.
You don't have a choice.
Back with Senator Kevin Cramer. We are live at the Talk Radio Town Hall. And it is Bemidji Woolen Mills edition of the Talk Radio Town Hall, counting down to the President of the United States coming tonight. Trump supporters are already lining up. There's a huge line. I'm going to share that on Facebook so you can see it live. They got a live video cam out there taking everything in, so it's pretty cool. All right, one more text, and then I'll go to the calls because there's a boatload of calls here. Does Senator Cramer have an opinion on the proposed tyrannical mask mandate from the city of Fargo City Commission? I will actively refuse this public space mandate, and if they arrest me, so be it. So, do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I'm against mask mandates locally, regionally, statewide, nationally. It just makes zero sense to me. Anyway, that's my short answer.
All right. There's a lot of text here today. 701-367-2054. Keep them coming. Let's go to the phones, though. Let's see here. Eric in Napoleon. Eric in beautiful Napoleon, North Dakota. What's on your mind? Eric, are you there? Daniel, if he is, I'm not hearing it.
Neither am I.
Going once, going twice. Daniel?
Logs from off.
Eric, are you there?
Hello.
Okay, now I can hear you. Go ahead, Eric. Yeah, wow.
Good morning, Senator. I just have a quick question. My brother and I have had a disagreement, and I researched it. I can't. There's so many different news stuff you hear, but on Obamacare, I've said it runs a $750 billion deficit. My brother said, no, it makes the government money. Can you share some light on that issue?
Well, first of all, I don't see any way in the world that can make the government money because the government's paying for a lot more health care. And, of course, we know, so are the people who have insurance. They're paying a whole lot more, and your employers are paying a whole lot more. But what you might be thinking about, and it's been a number of years now since the bill, but $750 billion, I think, is roughly how much Obamacare took out of Medicare to help pay for Obamacare. If you all remember that little-known fact that they literally had to take money away from Medicare. And, they often accuse us of cutting Medicare benefits. Well, Obamacare is what cut Medicare, and so that might be part of what you're thinking about from the deficit standpoint. But I'd have to do a little more digging to get this. I hate to get in the middle of family fights, but I think I'd have to say it'd be impossible for me to imagine that it's made the government any money.
Yeah, right. I can't imagine how it's make. But thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Little Napoleon common sense welcome every single day on What's on Your Mind. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay, Pat Rosensteel is on the phone. Pat is is a friend of mine, and he's been concerned about the potential increased tax on chemicals for our farmers. And I thought, well, Pat, I don't know who better to ask than Senator Kevin Cramer about that one. So, Pat, lay it on us. What is your concern?
Yeah, hey, thanks, Scott. Senator Cramer, favorite senator, seeing as I'm on the Minnesota side of the river. hopefully that won't be true for long. But, I'm tracking sort of this phosphate tariff that Senator Rubio seems to be pushing along with his corporate partner down there, Mosaic, in Florida, that would increase tariffs on phosphates from Russia and Monaco. And it sounds like the ITC, the International Trade Commission, and the Department of Commerce are going to be coming down with initial findings on Monday, the 21st, on whether or not that's a good idea. And with phosphates being the largest inorganic input in fertilizer, obviously, we're concerned. I happen to be the chairman of the Trade Alliance, but I'm concerned about the $480 to $640 million cost that will pass on to American farmers because it's the largest inorganic input of fertilizers. And it seems like, you know, with the ag economy facing, you know, serious headwinds in all kinds of different places, we should probably not be creating more in the interest of Mosaic, which is the domestic dominant player in that space. And that, right. You know, competition is good when it comes to, you know, phosphate and fertilizer. So wondering, A, if that's reached your radar screen yet, B, what you think about all that. And, you know, I'm sort of signing with Senator Sass and Joni Ernst and the Farm Bureau and all the people who think this is a bad idea, that time has not come. Just curious what your thoughts are.
Well, no, you'd be hard-pressed for to find me in favor of a tax or any type of a charge on inputs. I mean, input costs are the one thing that have been going up for farmers, unfortunately, other than probably fuel. But, you know, certainly not the price of the commodity. Florida's unique, and you know all of this already. I mean, Florida's unique in that it has this concentration, and obviously, phosphate is, as I understand it, is particularly huge for tropical farming. You know, it would be a huge expense. Now, it'd be a windfall for the industry, or for the state that has the industry, I suppose. But I don't really know how taxing phosphate would help really anybody in a productive sense. Now, how big an issue is it? How likely is it? I don't know. I think in the case of Florida, they have a tax or a severance of some sort on phosphate and another similar chemicals. But I'm far from an expert on it. All I can tell you is this is one of those sort of fundamental things that I don't need to do a whole lot of research on to know that I don't really look forward to a tax that gets passed down to producers in an economy, especially like this one.
Rosie? Good to hear from you, sir. And that is an issue, obviously, that concerns farmers. And sounds like, as usual, Senator Cramer's got your back on it. So hope that helps. Joe in Grand Forks, you're next on What's on Your Mind. Go ahead, Joe.
First of all, I think I'm the one driving Jalopy one because it's an 87 Chevy Silverado, and I'm facing east on Highway 2 as we speak.
Are you coming up? Coming up for the big rally?
I'm gonna try. I probably just drive by. I'd like to thank Kevin for honoring the POW Day by being at the funeral. But we need to do more for our disadvantaged veterans in the form that a lot of them have gone on Medicare, and there's a lot of fixed income senior citizens. I have a idea for a bill called the Civil Liberties Protection Act, where people can't be discriminated for because of their socioeconomic status. And it is happening. A doctor informed me when he was forced to use Medicare, he was a chiropractor, he said, mm-hmm. He was told a lot of people have underlying mental conditions that are on Medicare. Mm-hmm. What the heck? So we need to do something about this. The Civil Liberties Protection Act would get us a red wave in this country. And pointing out what Tina Smith and Greenfield and Iowa really want to do. They're all pushing Medicare, if you notice that, or medical issues.
Oh, boy, yeah, yeah.
This is
so
real.
I want to, yeah, no, it is. But so I want to hear a little more about this act or this idea and the problem that you want to solve. Now, believe me, I understand what you're saying about everybody's, you know, the Democrats want to push Medicare, in other words, mediocrity on it, on everybody for one reason or another. But I want to get back to this bias that you're referencing, because explain again what you're saying about the underlying, the presumption, or whatever they're saying, is the underlying.
Okay, my friend from Wisconsin, he should have been on stage last night or whatever night he was there. Mm-hmm. He's a Vietnam vet, and he took Obamacare. Yep. They told him at the VA, here's your Obamacare card. And a lot of them did. He says, first thing they do in Wisconsin, if he had a stroke in another state, is they take your driver's license.
Mm.
I'm trying to prevent civil asset forfeiture.
Yep.
Forced guardianship and forced escrow accounts on people that have some condition or something. It's just ridiculous. They judge people.
So,
not supposed to judge.
So, I just wanted that clarification. Thank you for that. And Scott, you know of examples similar to this that might be Medicare. It might actually be the VA itself. It might be state policies. It might be localized policies where as soon as they can take something from you, they will. And in many cases, that it might be the right to bear arms. In fact, that's one of the more common ones. Even though whatever they call the underlying condition, you may even have something. Maybe you suffer from PTSD, or maybe you have some. But it doesn't automatically disqualify you or eliminate your rights. Your rights cannot, your constitutional rights cannot be taken away from you without due process. And that's a bit of a movement in this country, along with several others, designed to try to strip people of rights, and especially for people who've served our country. The last thing we ought to be doing is robbing them of civil liberties without appropriate due process.
Texter says, trying to find Trump yard signs, can't seem to find anywhere. When can I pick them up? Thanks, Rick, in Horace.
Yeah, I've heard that problem lots of times. I will tell you this, at the Ronald Reagan Center in Bismarck, which is the North Dakota Republican Party, I just drove by it this morning looking for some outside event. They have some 2016 signs, so you have to go in and ask for those. I think they've been waiting for quite a while for a shipment. As you might imagine, the demand is tremendous. I've actually gotten some, this may seem odd, but I actually have gotten some online where I'll go on Amazon. And that really seems odd, but I'll go on Amazon and order flags, for example, because in a couple of days I can get them. And unless you can find the person in the Kmart parking lot, you probably, if you're going to be in Bemidji, there'll be some things on the street corners with some entrepreneurial vendors. I would grab whatever I can get whenever I can get it in any way I can get it, because
there's been somebody on this trip in Mandan as well.
If you
check that, I don't know who that is, but I don't know if they're there all the time, but that's another one to check out.
And all the Trump stores have them. Obviously, you're purchasing them, but at least you get them. I mean, most people don't care, but if you find a Trump store, they do as well. I was in South Dakota last weekend, and they actually, the Republican Party there had, you know, South Dakota for Trump signs specific, and then they had allotment for every chair, for every district. So you might check with your party folks, too. So more coming up with Senator Kramer after the timeout. Don't go away. Back with Senator Kevin Kramer in the Talk Radio Town Hall in our final segment. Next hour, we're going to talk with folks from Bemidji, Minnesota, about all the great things going on here as we get ready for the President of the United States to come. Plus, Jennifer Carnahan is in the House, a Republican chair in Minnesota, and doing a fantastic job. Look at all the enthusiasm in Minnesota. So look forward to chatting with Jennifer coming up next hour as well. And Hogan Gidley going to join us by phone. And Bill Batchelder and the team from Bemidji, Warren Mills, such great hosts here. So we're having a great time. All right, Senator, you ready for some more calls?
Sure.
I'm sure this will surprise you, but there is a ginormous line already going.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. The number I'm hearing is 11,000 that they can accommodate in the, you know, defined area. But, you know, I would imagine if there's 20,000 people out there, like many places, the nine are going to go on the other side of the hangars and still be able to see a good chunk of what's going on. That's the nice thing about these outdoor venues. Works pretty good. All right, here we go. On the road is Mark with a question for Senator Kramer. Go ahead, Mark.
Morning, guys. Morning, Senator Kramer and Scott. I'm calling just to remind you folks that today is the 73rd anniversary of the founding of the Air Force.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. I've got a son in the Air Force. He's an officer, and I've been keeping track of that since he got in there.
Now, I bet you have. Well, I'm doing a little message today on behalf of that, wishing the Air Force a happy birthday. But thanks for reminding us all. the Air Force is, as you know, it has been ever since it really was started, even when it was in the Army, but it is really the tip of the spear today. I mean, in modern warfare, the Air Force is the hero. They're the tip of the spear, but they're also the most underfunded of the services. So we need to continue to work on that. And of course, now we have a Space Force, which is sort of the next level of domain that we need to defend in this country.
Mark, were you aware that we have a member of the United States Senate from North Dakota that's on the Armed Services Committee?
Really? That's a good thing.
He's on the other end of the phone here with you. Right? That's pretty incredible.
I've met Senator Kramer on a few occasions. He probably doesn't remember me, but I've sat on the other side of a television camera with him several times.
Wow.
Cool. I know exactly who I'm talking to.
You know who I am now.
I know. Well, not to mention your voice is pretty easy to remember.
I'm
familiar with your son, as you know.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the call very much.
Thank you, son, again. Thank you.
Gretchen sends a note, says, can you help me? I texted my RSVP for my 15-year-old son and I to see President Trump in Bemidji tonight. I received a confirmation number, but I haven't received digital tickets. Is an e-ticket required? Will we be allowed on the premises? I'm sure you're getting a few of these questions, too, Senator Kramer. We do have some folks from the Trump campaign joining us next hour to answer all those kind of questions.
Good.
But my understanding is, tell me if I'm wrong, you don't need an e-ticket. Once you've got that confirmation, you're in the system, and really they don't end up checking a lot of the... I mean, when you're in line, they assume you got a ticket and you're there. That is more for, number one, to have your email and talk to you, but also have a head count, have an idea of how many people want to come. Am I right?
Well, that's been the tradition. I don't dare speak definitively for the campaign because I don't know, but generally that's been the case. And what they'll oftentimes have you do is just show the email, if anything. And that doesn't mean it has to be a digital. You can show the email you received on the phone. If you printed it out, great. Or most of the time they won't ask at all, to your point. But I've never heard that there was a need for a, quote, e-ticket or a digital ticket of any type.
Way more people, go in, put their email in, say they're coming, than come.
Yes.
And, they've got a formula of that. So, I always encourage people, just come. Just come and you're gonna see a lot of like-minded people and have a great time. So it's worth doing. Let me squeeze in one more here from Tom in Watford City. Tom, go ahead. You're up on What's on Your Mind.
Hello, Scott. Senator Kramer.
Hi, Tom.
I'm concerned deeply. I heard yesterday, I believe it was on the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, in Philadelphia, the governor has decided to change all the rules in the voting and allow every vote count, whether the ballot was signed or not. I'm a veteran, and I've been reading the Constitution, and there's some parts in there that describe what our duty is as citizens of the United States to deal with a government that's out of control.
All right, we're going to have to give Senator Kramer a chance to answer here because we have seconds left. Quick thought, Kevin?
Well, as you know, I strongly oppose the federalizing of voting anywhere, but there should be some basic backstop and some basic parameters. And I know some states are playing pretty fast and loose, but we try to leave that up to states.
Well, if they lose one of them, we could lose the whole election, and what Philadelphia did is...
Scary stuff, Tom. Thank you. Senator Kramer, thank you.